Welcome to Off Script with Dan Dwyer on Robinhood Radio, featuring in-depth interviews with guests from the world of theater and allied arts, underwriting support from Johnny Cake Books in Salisbury, Connecticut, whose collection of rare collectible and out-of-print books is housed in a 19th-century cottage in one of the most old-fashioned small towns in New England. And now, here's the host of Off Script, Dan Dwyer.
Well, thank you, Marshall. Tennessee Williams mentioned that name. And just about anybody can mention Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, Glass Menagerie, Streetcar Named Desire, but little known is that he also wrote dozens of full-length plays besides that. But besides that, he authored nearly 70 one-act plays, and three of them, each of which is seldom, if ever, produced, is going to be in a program called 3x10 at the Sherman Playhouse, by the Sherman Players, every weekend in March. The three plays are The Gnädige Fräulein, This Property is Condemned, and A Perfect Analysis Given by a Parrot. And you probably haven't heard of any of those, but today with me to tell us all about it and a little bit about Sherman Playhouse is Catherine Omquist, who's on the board of directors of Sherman Playhouse and will be directing the program called 3x10 every weekend in March. Welcome, Catherine.
Well, thank you very much, Dan. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, now this program really fascinates me because, you know, everybody, even if you don't go to the theater a lot, everybody knows the big titles that come from Tennessee Williams. But these three, you never see staged. So before we talk about how you came about this program, for those who might have been living under a rock for the last maybe 60 years, tell us about Sherman Playhouse, because you guys as a community theater have a long and enduring history of doing a lot of interesting stuff.
We have a marvelous history. We have actually, it's an 80-year-plus history. This was, this little gem of a playhouse was originally a church, as many of the theaters are, and it was founded by Betsy Schultz. Betsy is a board member founded by her grandparents. The only time that we have been dark was a few years during World War II. We have been in continual production, and it's truly a gem. Doing five shows this year. In addition to 3x10, we'll be doing Whodunit. That's going to be followed by,
You've got a great program, though, of all kinds of drama.
Yes.
Drama, comedy. Musicals.
Yes.
You had a great production of Cabaret.
Cabaret was fantastic.
That was really good.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll be doing an adaptation of A Christmas Carol, directed by Jane Farnell, adapted by our president and artistic director, Robin Frome. I'll think of the other two.
So this 3x10, is this the premiere? This is the first show of the new season?
Yes.
Okay.
This is the first show of the new season.
Okay, so these are probably, with the exception of This Property is Condemned, which has a different story that has nothing to do really with the play that you're going to do called This Property is Condemned. We never see these plays. You know a lot about theater. What attracted you? We know what attracts anybody to Tennessee Williams. But what about these three out of the 70 or more one acts that you could select from?
Tennessee Williams made a comment. He said, even the most modest of missionaries occasionally likes to try a different position. And as you said, he was coming off a string of terrific hits. The writing of Gnädige Fräulein in particular was quite a departure for him. I was first introduced to this many years ago in college, where I played the role of Molly, and it has always stayed with me. I love the fact that these are very real characters in an unreal world.
So let's just talk about that Gnädige Fräulein, just to start out. It's a one act. And how many characters in it?
We have five characters.
And what's the premise?
Okay, the premise is this is set in an old rundown boarding house. It is run by Molly, and Molly is under absolutely no delusions about the type of boarding house that she runs.
So it's a whorehouse.
Not a whorehouse, but she doesn't question what goes on.
Okay.
And who the bed partners are.
Got it. Or how long they stay.
Or how long they stay. However, she, as she says, in business matters, sentiment is not the cornerstone of her nature.
Mm-hmm.
Among she is visited by Polly, who is the society editor of the Kakaluni Gazette. So we have Polly, we have Molly, we have the heartbreakingly beautiful Gnadige Fraulein, who has fallen on hard times. The Fraulein was once performed before the crowned heads of Europe, and she has now been reduced to catching fish at the fish docks for her survival.
What's the English translation of
the gracious lady?
Of course, okay.
The gracious lady. Also in this cast of characters, we have Indian Joe, who's a blonde Indian, and we are treated to an appearance by a permanent transient. And it's a story of survival. It's very funny. It's also the conscious, very conscious cruelty of the strong upon the weak.
Hmm. So when was it first produced?
It was first produced in 1966 on Broadway with Zoe Caldwell, Kate Reid, and Margaret Leighton. Zoe Caldwell won her first Tony Award. She portrayed Polly.
Huh. Was it paired with other plays at the time?
Yes. Yeah, it was played with The Mutilated.
Okay, right.
Yes.
All right. What's the style of it? Is it tragicomedy? Is it absurd?
Okay,
Is it slapstick?
It's
farce?
A little. He calls it slapstick tragedy.
Okay.
But we're playing it. It's very realistic, and it has. You look at it, and in the past, if I saw one production, it was theater of the absurd, and we are not doing it that way. We, as I said, these are real characters, and this is an unreal world.
So you're playing it as far as melodrama?
We're playing it straight.
Okay.
We're playing it straight.
Great.
Yeah.
In case you're joining us, the program is Off Script. I'm your host, Dan Dwyer. My guest today is Catherine Almquist. She's going to be directing three of Tennessee Williams' almost forgotten one-act plays in a program called 3x10 at the Sherman Playhouse every weekend in March. Okay. So you have Gnadige Fraulein.
Yes.
The other one... is probably the best known by title to American audiences, if you have any kind of background in pop culture, called This Property is Condemned. It was a movie in 1966. I remember sneaking off to see it with some more enlightened members of my sixth grade class when we weren't supposed to see movies like that, starring Natalie Wood and a really young actor named Robert Redford in one of his early film roles. And I did a little bit of research about it. I was stunned to recall that it was directed by Sidney Pollack, who we all know. But one of the screenwriting credits goes to Francis Ford Coppola, who was a struggling screenwriter at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you're telling me in the discussion we had before the broadcast that the movie has really nothing to do with the play.
The movie has absolutely nothing to do with the play. They only share the same title. It's a two-character piece.
When was it written?
It was written in 1945.
Okay. Right.
Yes. And a young girl walking along a train tracks and strikes up a conversation, a friend with a young boy, and it's her story. She is alone in the world. She is living... This property is condemned in an abandoned house, and it's her tale and how she is surviving.
It's a two-hander.
It's a two-hander. It is achingly beautiful.
Is the woman older than the young boy?
No,
she's
13, 14 years old, and the young man is 15, 16.
So they're kids.
They're kids. They're kids. They're alone. They're on their own.
Let's talk. Let's use these two kids in this two-hander called This Property is Condemned. How do you cast that? I mean, do you have kids age appropriate?
No. I have two marvelous actors, Risa Nestor, who is portraying the young girl, Willie, and Joseph Russo, who is portraying the young man. They are older than the characters But they play very young.
It doesn't matter.
No,
yeah.
They play very young. And actually, there is a history in Member of the Wedding. Julie, oh, I forget her name, marvelous actress, portrayed Frankie, the young girl. And she was in her 20s at the time. So yeah, it can be done and done very successfully.
Well, it's also the most recent example is the actress who got the Tony Award for Supporting Actress this year for playing Atticus Finch's daughter, the famous character
exactly.
To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yes.
And I'm having a brain fart now. It's one of the most famous characters in American novels.
Scout.
Thank you.
Scout.
Yeah, I mean, the woman is roughly 37, 38 years old, and you don't doubt for a minute that she's about 11.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
That's the magic of theater.
Yes.
Did you have trouble casting those two, or did you know when you said, I want to do this play, you had two people like that in mind?
I never go into any play without thinking who's out there.
Right.
And I go into every play as well, hoping someone marvelous is going to walk through the door. And I think that's what every director does. And the actor in me is always insecure, saying, oh, you know, am I good enough? Will I get this? The director, and a totally different part, wants everyone who is auditioning to succeed. So I was very lucky. I'd worked with Risa and with Joe before. And marvelously, they both came through the door, and it came together. They read together, and it was magic right there.
That's great.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about that. It's community theater.
Community theater.
So where do people how do people find you, and how do you find them? Is there a community of actors? How far is your reach? And how do you develop a company, as it were, without having a formal company?
Okay. The term community theater is interesting because to some people it can denote, oh, isn't that fun? The local dentist is going to carry a spear.
It doesn't mean amateur.
No, absolutely not. The level of talent, the level of commitment I would put against any theater company. And actors, it's word of mouth. We have... when we did Dividing the Estate, I had an actor who commuted from New York City. When we did The Tempest this past summer, we had actors commuting from New York City. So it's word of mouth and advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Advertising. And, of course, we want to make the Sherman Place. It is. It's a lovely place to work, and people love to come back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The third one. A perfect analysis given by a parrot. That's a mouthful for me.
That is one of my favorite titles, A Perfect Analysis Given by a Parrot.
When was that written?
It was written in 1958, and it was first produced, it was found in Esquire magazine. And that...
As a play or a short
as
story?
As a play. As a play.
Because Williams wrote short stories
yes,
and screenplays, too.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And actually, the two characters in Parrot, Flora and Bessie, appear very briefly in Rose Tattoo.
How?
Because
that's just been on Broadway this year,
yes.
So some of our listeners might have seen it.
They are criticizing Serafina and the way she sews.
One of two of the catty neighbors?
Yes, exactly.
I remember. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And how do they pick up in... A Perfect Analysis Given by a Parrot.
In A Perfect Analysis Given by a Parrot, they are, as Williams described them, two ladies in the autumn of their youth. And they're basically camp followers. They are following the Sons of Mars, and by their own admission, they have never missed a convention. So they have traveled from Memphis to St. Louis and are out on the town looking for a good time.
Okay. What kind of good time? Well, we have to go see the play to find out.
Yeah, exactly. Come and see the play and find out. But they are very definitely fans of the Sons of Mars.
Okay. Is that a clue?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. All right. We'll leave it at that.
Yes.
All right. We'll leave it at that. The three plays now you've got. The Gnade Fräulein, This Property is Condemned, and A Perfect Analysis Given by a Parrot. I've just heard about these pretty much for the first time, and I'm looking for what's in common with them and what I hear, which is runs deeply through most of Williams' works, is strong women.
Very strong women.
Talk about that.
Yes, very strong women. And these characters are, they're very much, this is not Blanche DuBois. This is not Maggie. These characters.
Well, Maggie's a strong one.
Well, so is Blanche in her way.
In her own way, yes. Exactly.
But they're totally different. Okay, let's just take Gnädige Fräulein. These are characters. They're not of high society, shall we say. This is Cockalooney Bay. This is poor. And as Polly says, they're not living on fish and fish alone because of any religious influence.
Mm-hmm.
The Gnädige is a survivor. As I said, she's the most important character in it. She is the one who performed before crowned heads of Europe, is now reduced to catching fish. This is survival.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the thread that runs through the three plays is survival. What they do to survive.
Well, that's clearly in Streetcar Named Desire.
Yes.
It's clearly in Maggie, too.
Yes.
I mean, she's got to hang on to bread. She's got to hang on to that inheritance.
And I like to think that Tennessee Williams loved women. Tennessee Williams understood women. We all know Tennessee Williams, brilliant playwright. We know his background. He was gay. Did he like men? He loved women. And that's the difference. He loved women. He revered women.
Is it a mother thing? I don't know his biography that well.
Actually, I've been rereading it, going into bits and pieces of it. Well, his sister, you know, Glass Menagerie is based on his sister. And he was extremely close to her all his life. And women were his friends. Women were his friends. Forget lovers. They were friends.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always the glue that keeps two people together.
Mm-hmm.
You can be lovers and friends, but most important, friends.
Right. In case you're just joining us, the program, Off Script, I'm your host, Dan Dwyer. My guest today is Catherine Almquist. She's the director of a program at Sherman Playhouse every weekend in March called 3x10, which is a presentation of three seldom seen, if never produced, one-act plays by the great Tennessee Williams.
Mm-hmm.
You've been in theater a long time, so you know a lot about Tennessee Williams. Did you have to go back to a library or to your bookshelf or online and sort through the possibilities to put these three together? How did I do it?
Yeah. I have always wanted to do Gnädige Fräulein, and I have several of Williams one acts, and I just sat and I read, and I thought, I mean, there were, at first I thought of doing 8x10, but that would be a little bit much. But just three plays that really spoke to me, and it was these three, and also just given the constrictions, I wanted a manageable cast. I was just thinking of the set.
So it's five characters in one play.
Five characters in one.
Two-handers.
Yes.
Yeah.
In Perfect Analysis given by a parrot, we have a brief appearance by a short little Italian waiter.
Okay.
And two Sons of Mars, the aforementioned Sons of Mars.
Got it.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So getting back to Tennessee Williams and women.
Yes.
And you've already indicated, I think, in some of your descriptions of the place, that there's an element of the outlandish.
Yes.
In some of this. So where do you prevent Tennessee Williams and his flair and his love of women and his sense of the outlandish and his, what we now know thoroughly as a gay sensibility,
mm-hmm.
From slipping into something that most people would say is camp?
I think the whole key is to play it very realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Don't.
I mean, we've seen
yes,
campy
of
versions.
Course. Oh,
Streetcar Named Desire.
We've seen campy. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. And I think particularly with these three, it has to be played totally straight.
So what kind of, putting you on the spot, what kind of director are you? I mean, are you a director that lets actors find their way? Do you sit down at a table and have essentially a group or therapy session about what the theme is, what is the shared, you know, journey we're all going to take here?
Okay.
Do you do line reading directions? Or?
The first thing we do is just start with the table read.
Mm-hmm.
And we're rehearsing each show separately. So we won't all even come together until the week before we open. But start with, what's he talking about? What do we want? What does he want? What does each character want? And I am certainly lucky that I am working with a marvelous cast. Noel DeSaggio, Beth Bonobo, Agnes Fohn are wonderful. And they work extremely well together. And it comes together through blocking, and the one direction, one bit I always say is, don't ask me if it's okay if you can try something. Just do it and make it big.
Mm-hmm.
An actor's job is to give directors options. Make it big. I can always bring you back. But last night we were
rehearsal. Now, yeah.
Yes, in rehearsal. And it was a particularly extremely difficult bit of blocking. So we just we went through it many ways, tried it, just try and try again. And then afterwards we were sitting around talking, had a little glass of wine to end the week, and just talked about characters. With the Gnadiga, there's a heartbreaking line.
Is that all women in that?
No, there is a permanent transient, and there is a cockaloony bird that makes an appearance, and Indian Joe, the ideal male. But anyway, and please come and see this ideal male. You'll love him. He is unlike any other ideal male that you will ever see. But anyway, with the Gnadig of Fraulein, there is a line. She bored him because she adored him. And so the girls, we just sat down and we talked, what does this mean? And I think...
She bored him because she adored him.
And so the three of us, Noel, Agnes, Beth, and I sat around and said, we know what that's like.
Well, tell me about it.
I think a lot of women do, when you're particularly young and vulnerable and you will do anything, you will twist yourself in a pretzel, you will do anything if only he will smile upon you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the trap the Gnadiga fell into. She adored the Viennese dandy. And he did nothing but toss her an insincere smile.
Another woman scorned?
And a woman scorned.
Hmm.
Yes, a woman scorned.
What happens if you get in a group and there's fundamental disagreement about the nature of the character?
That's fun.
Okay.
That's what makes it fun.
Yeah.
And let's explore it. And as I say, I'm not the one up there playing the character. You're playing the character. So let's try it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try it your way. Let's do it. Let's see how it works. And that's what I love about the rehearsal process.
Beyond the three one acts that you're doing, everybody's who loves theater has seen one version of Tennessee Williams play multiple times or another. What is your favorite? Or among the favorites? It's an unfair question to select one, maybe, unless you have one. Or the question another way could be, what is your favorite character of all the Tennessee Williams characters?
Oh, of all the Tennessee Williams characters, I love Maggie. I have to say, after all these years, my favorite, one of my favorites, is still Gnädige Fräulein.
Really?
Yes.
When did you first see the production?
I was in it in 1972.
Where? Now you're leaving all the important parts when we've only got 2 minutes left.
At the College of St. Francis, Dan.
That's great. So yes. You were in college production.
I was in a college production.
And you played her.
Yes, and I was green as grass, but this play just stuck with me.
You were 19, 20 years old, something like that?
Yes, 19 years old. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, sweet young thing.
Mm-hmm. And how did the production work out?
The production worked out great. Mm-hmm. It was student one acts. Anyone in theater knows what those are like. And I absolutely loved it. I played Molly, and it was, she wasn't.
Oh, you didn't play the.
No.
No, you played Molly.
No, I played Molly, and Molly wasn't pretty. And always, I always wanted to be pretty. That was so important to me. Molly isn't. And it was so freeing. I just absolutely loved it. And then my big heartbreak came when I was a senior, and we did Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, and I was not cast as Maggie. I thought life was not worth living.
What role did you get?
I didn't.
Oh, dear. I was going to say, at least you didn't get Big Mama, because I know you're a versatile actress, but I can't see you ever playing Big Mama.
No,
I
mean, it was the heartbreak. I thought life isn't worth living, and here I am all these years later to tell you I survived.
So when you're directing now a character that you played some time ago, what do you see in this actress that's playing your Molly? Is it still your Molly, or is it her Molly?
Oh, no, this is Beth Bonobo's Molly, and uh-huh. Beth has got that character nailed.
Good.
She has
got
it.
She's better than you?
Oh, yes.
Good.
So much better.
because when you think of Williams' plays, you don't necessarily think of male characters. What's your favorite male character in the Tennessee Williams canon? Stanley's hard to like.
Oh, not no, Stanley. No. Definitely not Stanley, and absolutely not Brick. The doctor in Summer and Smoke.
Aha.
I
that
like him.
That was the part that was played by Monty Clift,
yes,
right?
Yes,
yes. Yeah. Very
yes.
sympathetic
the doctor
character.
In The Doctor in Summer and Smoke, yes.
Great. Tell us a little bit about the schedule, 3x10 at the Sherman Playhouse.
Okay, well, 3x10, we open on March 6th. We run 4 weekends in March. That means we close on the 28th. We've got 2 matinees on the 15th. And on the 22nd, we are having a talkback after the 15th matinee with Dr. Joe Jeffries of New York University. On Friday the 13th, it's LGBT, free cocktails, and $5 off. You don't have to show anything. You don't have to be a particular orientation. Just bring the coupon. We welcome all. Marvelous, marvelous evening.
Sounds great.
Thank you, Dan.
You're welcome. 3x10, Tennessee yes. Williams, 3-1-act, seldom, if ever seen, right here in Western Connecticut at the Sherman Playhouse every weekend in March. I want to thank Karen Omquist, who's directed all those plays we've been talking about at the Sherman Playhouse, for coming in. And I want to thank you for listening. Until the next time, from Off Script to you, be well.
Thank you.
Underwriting support for Off Script with Dan Dwyer from Johnny Cake Books in Salisbury, Connecticut, whose collection of rare, collectible, and out-of-print books is housed in a 19th-century cottage in one of the most old-fashioned small towns in New England. Off Script with Dan Dwyer is also available via podcast on our on-demand page, robinhoodradio.com. Click on On Demand, and then click on Off Script with Dan Dwyer.